You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always on the coast of this wonderful podcast. And join me on the other line, if you're on YouTube, you already know this, Mr. Tony East from Forbes.com, West Indianapolis News, to talk about Malcolm Brogdon's extension. Tony, how are you?
I am excellent, Adam. I think this is a much bigger deal than it's kind of being given credit for. Probably the second biggest thing that's happened to the Pacers built team building wise this offseason behind the Rick Carlisle hiring, maybe even above that in terms of importance. And he's one of the best, probably five free agents the Pacers have ever been able to go get. And now he's putting pen to paper to extend his contract with the team, even though Malcolm Brogdon, currently maybe not the most popular guy amongst fans for some reason, this is a pretty huge deal for the team.
I think that speaks more volumes about the offseason maybe than him, but I get what you mean by this being a big deal. If we're going to start right at it, I think it's maybe not like a big free agent signing kind of deal, but it is a big deal because of what it keeps him here and does.
But I think, yeah, so we should probably go back a
Yes, we should
first.
Go back. I wanted to start right in with you. So Brogdon signed a two-year, $45 million extension. That will basically mean his next 4 years of about $90 million guaranteed in cash, a little bit less, I think, is the number. Yep. And what that does, it locks him up from being traded this year and basically means he's going to be the Pacer, I think, through basically the rest of the Rick Carlisle's current contract. It seems like they've kind of lined those guys up, basically.
Yes. Yeah, they're lined up. So it's 2 years on top of the 2 years he already has. His last 2 years are now at $22.5 million, which is less than the last year of his current deal, ironically. So about what he was going to be making anyway, I would say about his market value for a solid but not elite starter at his position. So I think it's good value for him. It'll be exceptional value if he's able to play more than what is he plays about 75. I think he's played 76% of his games since joining the Pacers. If he can get that up to 85, all of a sudden this looks like a great deal. If he hovers around 76 still, then it will just look like an okay deal. But I think the money is pretty good given the skills he's shown, right? That's about the money he got when he signed with the Pacers originally. And I think the years are good because it lines him up with Carlisle. It pushes him through the entire core of, you know, the Sabonis era or the Turner era or whatever you want to call it. Whoever's around, he'll be a part of that team. He's lined up with McConnell now, which isn't a big deal, but they've got the point guards locked up. So just getting him on a timeline a little more congruent with their future plans in the Carlisle era makes a lot of sense, especially if he wanted to be back.
Yeah, I think in some ways, kind of actually might be a slight discount. So since he signed his last deal, and like you said, it's basically the same contract, the cap is either gone up or based on when it's kind of what end it would be up by that point. And I feel like his last deal was kind of him being paid based on the fact that he only plays three quarters of the game, right? Like if he was a guy who played 80 games a year at the level he played, he probably was looking closer to a max deal when he hit the offseason that year. So, I mean, in the max deal now versus like when he was there 2 years ago is probably about $5 million more and will probably end up being almost maybe $10 million more by the time he would hit free agency. But I think for him, it locks in some money now. He's had injury history, so this guarantees him, you know, another 80 or less than $90 million going forward or another 45 on top of what he already has. So, like, it makes sense why he signed it. But I actually think barring, like, even if he only does play 75% of the game, that's probably actually a little bit below what he could get if he was, like, a free agent today.
Can I tell you why I think it's below his market a little bit too?
Yeah.
Let's zoom out and look at some extensions this offseason, if you don't mind. Terry Rozier in Charlotte signs a four-year, $96.2 million extension.
Yeah, he had a good year last year.
He is making more per year than Brogdon, and I think Brogdon's better than Rozier, right?
Rozier's younger, right? That might be the only thing going in his favor?
Slightly, yes. Yes.
Okay. But yes, I agree. I think Brogdon's a better player when he plays, but Rozier, how many games did Rozier play last?
Terry's got the health going for him. That's for sure.
And he has that. He owned Eric Bledsoe in a playoff series, you know, behind him.
I don't want to be little. Actually, Bledsoe played 63 games 2 years ago and 69 last year. So they're closer in health, but the 69 out of 72 is pretty good. So Rozier is good. I don't want to be little Rozier. Like, he got $96 million for a reason, but I think Brogdon is definitely better, right? So there's good value there. Marcus Smart, his extension this summer was 4 years, $77 million. Do you think Brogdon is $12 million better than Marcus Smart? I would say yes, myself.
Yeah, I think – so I definitely think Brogdon can actually be your number two. I don't think Smart can, but I think
– I agree.
Smart has a lot of value in what everything else he can do. He probably actually is like a if he's your number three and you can kind of overpay for that, he's probably pretty solid, right? In that situation where he's like kind of the three to Brown and Tatum, that's actually not a bad spot for him. But yes, I think he is better.
Okay, and then the last one for similar-ish money, Aaron Gordon's extension was 4 years, $86.6 million, so almost exactly the same. I like Aaron Gordon a little bit, not as much as everybody else, but I think Brogdon is definitely better than Aaron Gordon. So
yeah, again, but Aaron Gordon's 25 years old, right?
Sure,
he's super
sure.
young still.
That's but there's a point we do this with Aaron Gordon every year.
No, that's also what I was going to say. Is like Aaron Gordon, like I think when you say it, you're like, oh yeah, he's better than Brogdon. I'm like, he's not. Has he ever had a better offensive season?
Oh, I don't think he's better than Brogdon. No.
I think at first glance, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to be better than Brogdon. Like someday.
Yeah.
But he's kind of reached the point where he is who he is, I think, at this point. But who knows?
So compared to what we've seen going this offseason, I think having Brogdon locked up for 4 for $89 is a pretty good deal. But yeah, health is the big factor for him because total value is very important on the life of these deals. And again, I think I actually think people are overstating his injuries a little bit. Like I see on Twitter, like, oh, he can't keep missing 30% of the Pacers games. He's never missed 30% of the Pacers games in a single season ever, right? Like that, he's missed 25 and 20. Like it's still a decent amount, but I think people are kind of overstating it to an extent. But you know, health has certainly been a problem for him. And if he can be healthy, which has only happened once in his career with Milwaukee, I think it was his rookie year, right?
Sounds right.
Yes, it was when he played 75. If he can do that again, this is a fantastic home run, underpaid valued player on this deal. And if he keeps hovering around that 3 out of every 4 mark he's been at, then it's probably just a fair deal. And I get that. And I think if you're getting a guy who's your starting point guard, who's been very good for you, remember, I say when he's healthy, he's the best player on the team, even though he's not always healthy. Getting that guy for a good value is a great thing to do for a small market team. So keeping your good players, keeping your top 50 player locked up until 2025, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I think actually the timing of his injuries matter more than anything else, right? I think he can miss 20 games a year, but it has to be the middle 20 of the season, not like, and he's had some good luck, right? I mean, whatever.
He's never missed the playoffs. Yeah.
Well, I think he had really good luck in the COVID year, frankly, because he was going to miss the playoffs, most likely, right? It seemed like, or it was going to be very tight. So, like, if he misses 60 games a year, but he plays every playoff series, you don't really notice. I mean, there's plenty of players who we don't realize, like, miss whole years because of injury, but because they play in the playoffs. And ultimately, that's kind of where you're judged on if you're a good player and your team is good, right? Is the playoffs at some point. So, yeah, I think the injury thing is just like, where does it happen? When does it happen? And are they like long-term concern things, right? Like, I think like a lot of the injuries, like a broken wrist, I think was that the issue 2 years ago, right? He broke his wrist or hand or something like that.
Yeah, everything. I think everything at some point at this point.
No, but like that one was like kind of like, it was some kind of fluky, right? It wasn't like his issue's always been his foot, I think, has been the issue, or foot or leg, something like that.
Yeah.
Like that. And that's never really, I think, been an issue, right? It's always been like a little bit of back here. Like things that just seem like they're a little more part of wear and tear versus just like the same injury over and over again, the same spot. Like Sumner, I think, for example, right? He kind of has the same leg injury in the same area over and over again. That's a little more like long-term concerning than Brogdon's, who hasn't really had like a major foot problem. But as I'm saying this, I'm probably cursing him into existence as I speak. So I'll stop now.
He did say at practice today, Sky, I'm going to tweet this out, that he is playing in the first game. Like that's all the confirmation we need. So health is already back for him. He's playing on opening night against Charlotte. We'll be previewing that game more tomorrow. Adam, we need to pat ourselves on the back, by the way. When we did our extensions preview pod, we only said two of the guys who are eligible make any sense to get an extension. And do you remember who they were?
They were Brogdon and they were Warren. If something, did we not say Warren?
Kind of. It was Brogdon and Sumner. And Sumner got traded and hurt, so that couldn't happen. And Brogdon, which made sense. And I'm sorry to toot my own horn a little bit, but I did write with Brogdon a short in my article about extensions. A short Brogdon extension could make sense, especially if he steps into a larger leadership role this coming season. But there also remains reasons why both sides may not want to pursue an extension at this time. So I think that the leadership part's a big thing for why they did this now, too, is those who aren't aware, the deadline for players who had 2 years left in their deal or more to get extended was midnight on Monday night. It's 9:30 p.m., so technically LeVert or Turner could still get extended before midnight. I highly, highly doubt either of them would agree to anything. But that's why this happened when it did. And I think Brogdon's stepping into that leadership role, right, planning the offseason activities in California, planning, as he said, he's planning team dinners on road trips. I think that was media day or maybe the first practice. I can't remember when he said he was doing that. Every time we're at practice and the players are shooting at the end of practice. He's always on the sidelines talking to an assistant coach, Mike Weinar, Jenny Buschek. Often it's Lloyd Pierce. Sometimes it's even Carlisle, right? He is stepping up into that leadership role, and I think that's part of why Carlisle was really happy with him. He played well in the preseason. I think he's going to fit well with how Carlisle wants to play. I think he's a good fit now that he can be that leader for the future of the Pacers, and I think that it makes him a good fit to be on this team for longer.
Yeah, I also think you're maybe overthinking it much. What you said early on about you don't get free agents here, so when you have a opportunity to keep them, you keep them. And that's, you know, especially on when you don't have to, like, overpay them, like, an insane amount, right? I mean, I think this seems like any team would have signed Barton to this. I mean, it's a very fair deal in terms of both sides. Both sides get a little bit of what they want. Nobody's kind of getting too much money or too much whatever. This is, like, this is a pretty, like, if we discuss, oh, what's the right deal for Brogdon? We might even say 2 for $50 is probably more logical than
what. Well, 45. Can I spin you the obvious question, too? Like, let's say the Pacers had cap room this summer, right? And Malcolm Brogdon was a free agent coming from another team after averaging 21, 5 and 6 on 45, 39 splits, right? You'd go, oh, yeah, you give him 4 for, like, you look at Rozier, you go, yeah, you give him 4 for $100 immediately, and they get him for 4 for $89. So, just looking at the totality of his deal, I think you'd have said, yeah, you absolutely offer that if he was a free agent this summer. So it makes a ton of sense to me why both sides were agreeable to this.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we need to take a break, but can I give you some, can I do a really crazy tease that probably will not translate to a great segment, but
I just want
to give the tease. All right. So we're going to take one break, but on the other side of the break, we're going to tell you why the Brogdon signing means a Ben Simmons trade might not be in the Pacers' future. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Theragun. Don't let the stress of daily life weigh on your body. Whether you're an elite athlete or someone like me, you're just trying to make it through the day tension-free, Theragun can help. Theragun is the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscles tension using a scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power. And it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. The Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good, it gets to the source of the pain by releasing tension using Theragun's signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than vibration alone. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out or an injury or a stress of everyday life, there is no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. The OLED screen and design make you feel like you're holding something from the future. Just go to their site and check it out today. And the Theragun app learns your behaviors and suggests guided routines. Theragun is trusted by over 250 professional sports teams and elite athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, and thousands of other customers. And today, you can try Theragun for $199 for 30 days when you use promo code LOCKEDON. That's Theragun.com/LockedOn to get in now and try the Gen 4 Theragun today. Theragun/LockedON. Theragun.com/LOCKEDON. All right, Tony might have not liked my tease because there's a simple answer to it, but I think the one line about the Brogdon signing is it means it locks him in for a year of no trade. Basic possibility. So that it makes him not possible in a Ben Simmons trade. The logical move had always been Brogdon and LeVert for Simmons. That's off the table. I guess they could still make a Simmons trade, but I don't think they're gonna make one anyways, but now it's even less likely.
Yeah, I think you kind of were being teasy on purpose, but
of course, Cody, I set it up that way.
The rumored offers included Brogdon because he's a good fit for what the Sixers would want and maybe the best player they could have gotten at this time in a Simmons trade. So the rules, how they work is if you extend a guy to the point where his deal is 4 years or longer in total length, he is not eligible to be traded for 6 months. So Brogdon's extension being today, October 18th, for you listening yesterday or prior to that, means that he cannot be traded until March 18th of 2022. And the trade deadline will be in February, right? So he's extended beyond next year's trade deadline. So he will not be able to be traded until next offseason once the Pacers are officially eliminated from their coming season. So if Ben Simmons is traded this season, Brogdon can no longer be in that package. Now, LeVert's been rumored, and obviously the two centers and how the Pacers do that kind of stuff. Like Simmons isn't technically eliminated from the Pacers' plans if they still have interest. But Brogdon can no longer go to the Sixers in a Simmons deal this season, and he can't be traded at all this season, which is a pretty big deal. And just in general, in terms of how the Pacers plan, you know, they don't need a point guard anymore. They can't trade for one. They can't trade their starter away. And that's a big deal, even if it's just a minor part of the rules.
Yeah, I think that's all that needs to be said about that, to be honest. I just think that I don't think Pacers were making a Simmons trade. I'm not sure any team is making a Simmons trade at this point, just the way he looked. But that's one of the wrinkles of this extension. What other things? I know you had a bunch of things you want to hit on with the Brogdon. What other things you got about it?
Yeah, I already talked about the leadership part a little bit, but I thought that was a big deal that he stepped into that role and then gets his extension. Let's talk about the team's timeline a little bit, because you know, we talked about lining it up with Carlisle, and I think that's a big deal. But you know, the fact that they committed to one of their core pieces now, you know, Sabonis is now extension eligible next summer, for example. Do you think this makes him more likely to stick around in the future? Do you think LeVert maybe would be more likely to stick around in the future? What about Warren? He's a free agent next year. Yeah. This doesn't cut into their – I just want to get ahead of this. No. Doesn't really cut into their cap space any years, right? They might have cut into a little bit of space in 2023, but not in the year that the new CBA might kick in 24 or 25 when they basically have nothing on the books. So they didn't really cut into any of their space in a substantial way to do this. So how much do you think this – you know, we talked about it lining up with Carlisle, but in terms of other players – who all expire before him now, do you think this makes any of those other guys more likely to stay a little longer?
Yeah, I think the thing about Sabonis and LeVert is they're going to both wait till their deals expire because they can get much bigger paydays, and they're younger and they want the bigger payday. I think Brogdon is at the age where he may not, like even in 2 years, he might not get the big payday because he'll be on the other side of 30, injury prone. There's always that issue where like Sabonis will be 27, I think, when his contract ends, right, or 28. He's looking at, you know, if he can keep putting up all-star and maybe an all-NBA one season, like a max, like a for sure 5 year max from the Pacers or a 4 year max from somebody else. But I think for those guys, what it does, it lines up, and this is Carlisle, Brogdon, and Duarte all on a 4 year run. And so if, you know, Duarte ends up being a decent player, Carlisle ends up being a decent coach, it does, I think, help Sabonis and LeVert sort of decide, oh, maybe in 2 years I do want to come back to this roster because they've got kind of a core in place. They have a coach in place, they have a number two in place, and they have this. And they have like a young guy in place, which is like a desirable for a lot of players. But I think what it also kind of does is if the team is, let's say, overachieves the next two seasons, it does make them a possibility for a trade for a star, right? Like where they can convince themselves we can trade for a disgruntled star and he'll like it here because we have a guys ready to play around him, right? I think the last time the Pacers had a star, as in Paul George, they had a crap roster around him. And so that's why he ultimately wanted to leave. I think if he probably would have left anyways, but if he had a better roster, you probably would have thought twice about it, right? And so they're sort of setting this up where they're going to hopefully have a good core of coach, number two player, and some other stuff to be able to sell to anybody that wants to come here, frankly.
Yeah, Brogdon and Sabonis being a part of the team on guaranteed deals through 2024, I think is a pretty big part of this. You know, like you, to the point of you saying they could trade for a star, like you could probably tuck yourself into several timelines of stars now because you're lining them up with two of your best players in that timeline for a long time, right? They're I'll say 50 to 60, whatever, but they're both in that level of top players, Sabonis and all-star 2 years in a row. Brogdon probably would have been last year if he didn't get hurt and really slump at the end of January. Of course, injuries being a factor for him as well. But yeah, they've got the pieces for that well. And another, this is maybe a little too overthinky for me, but this is just how I look at cap sheet stuff. Brogdon is now lined up with Adam. Do you know who it is?
No.
Chris Duarte.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, I think that's a subtly cool thing just to see, like, if he's a really big part of your team in the next couple seasons, you know, you've got him locked up around two really good stars as well. Maybe even Isaiah Jackson's in that mix. That's probably really, really overthinking the timelines here. Yeah, I'm really overthinking timelines there. But you have your core of your team locked up for a long time now. And I think all the other players are good, especially Warren. We'll see what happens with his free agency next year. But they're not the ones that you would want to be all lined up for the next 3 to 4 years, but now they have all the super important guys in that group.
Yeah, and this finally, we start to see the Pacers beyond 2 year plan, because I think we've sort of seen them have a plan to like this year, and then that kind of got, when they traded Vic for LeVert, we kind of said, okay, they also have the next 2 year plan. Now we kind of see what their 4 year plan is, right? We kind of think for a while that this was kind of the year where it would all come together. They have a bunch of contracts expiring this year, or at least a few of them would expire, and then. But now it's going to kind of reline up for basically 2 years from now and then the fourth. So I imagine we'll start to see, like even, I guess, McConnell, right, would match this timeline theory, right?
Your point guard rotation is locked up for a long time now, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could easily make a trade for a backup point guard using McConnell someday if they decide that's what it's worth. But yeah, they want to
talk about their plan, right? Like next year, their summer was probably just Warren and the MLE anyway because of, you know, the cap not growing in a huge way in any of the future seasons until the last year of this deal. But two summers from now, 2023 summer, they'll have Brogdon under contract, Sabonis for sure under contract, McConnell for sure under contract, and then probably Duarte and Jackson, and that's it. Like, they could have a ton of space that summer to surround good players, right? That's a huge part of your plan. So now you're looking at the 2023 summer going, wow, okay, you know, if we're really good in 2022, we have all the bird rights on some key guys and we have a lot of space, like that could be a big summer because you know Brogdon and Sabonis could be coming back.
I feel like, so with the superstar stuff, the space isn't as valuable, I think, as much as it used to be because
stars they don't even get to free agency anymore.
Yeah, stars just coming in, pushing out. Now, I think the cap space has been useful to the Pacers in the past for like getting those like mid-tier guys, right? Whether it's like using cap space to get Warren, Bogdanovich going back, Collison, like and even Brogdon in a way, right? They kind of use space to kind of grab him. I mean, those, that's when it's been useful to them. I don't know. For the superstars, I don't think it matters. I mean, they all sign. They signed a 4-year or 5-year extension. They just expect to trade in year one.
Well, that said, adding another Brogdon-level player to Brogdon and Sabonis would be awesome.
Well, I mean, we've said this for a while. Like, the Pacers are the perfect team where if they could just, like, figure out how to flip one center, something else for a superstar, they would go from being 7-8 seed to probably a top 4 seed in the conference because they're, like, everything else. They've got a pretty deep roster. They've got good number 2s and 3s. They've got some young guys. Like, they've got a lot of the other pieces. They got a coach, hopefully, now. They got a lot of things in place. They're just sort of missing, like, you know, there's number one, and so it's either like find that guy on the draft, like maybe Duarte becomes that, or some other way, right? I mean, I know you're laughing because I don't think he's going to either, but like that's how
you. Yeah, I think he'll be better than I thought, but yeah.
But that's how you go from being like a 6-8 cycle to being a top 4 cycle team, right? That's
right.
Sort of been the Pacers' recipe in the past. That was how they got to the Paul George era, frankly, was because he turned from the 10th pick, a guy who was a rotation guy, to a top 10 player in the league at one point. And that was how they kind of were really thriving in the Vic era, because they traded for a guy who was a top, let's say, 75 player and became a top 25 one. So that's their best bet. But this at least helps put some lock in a little bit more of a core for the next 4 years, I feel like.
Yeah, I think some other storylines I want to get to, I'm assuming you want to do a break here soon, is what this says about the Pacers' belief in him. We already other players' extensions in the future. We kind of talked about that and just some other fallouts from this, basically.
Yeah, we'll do that stuff next. But first, gotta get to today's sponsors. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is also brought to you by our wonderful friends over at BetOnline.ag. BetOnline.ag is back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season, and even more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all things football and basketball this season. Head over to their new site and check it out on either your phone or on your desktop. You can sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Use promo code Locked On. That means you put $100 down, you get $50 free promo code LOCKEDON. They have everything on BetOnline.ag, from football to basketball to baseball, postseason, the NHL, boxing, and even UFC, and right up to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait. Take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. And we are also brought to you by wonderful friends over at Rock Auto. The ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. You can save time and money while using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, or even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Rock Auto is a family business doing do-it-yourselfers online for over 20 years. Prices are always reliably low and the same for every customer. They have everything you need. So go explore their easy website today and find the solution to your auto parts need. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in the How to Hear Us box so they know that we sent you. Main selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, so we're back. Which one do you want to start with, Tony? You have a few topics left to go through.
I have two. I'll do the big one first for you, Adam.
Okay, go.
I'll let you have to think about this. Let's say the Pacers play out the next 4 years of Brogdon's deal and they win 2 playoff series. And maybe that's a little ambitious, but just pretend. And he plays about at the level he has been with the Pacers for the last 2 years. Does he go down as the best point guard in Pacers history?
Ooh, that's a good question. Who are my contenders? I'm thinking back now. Like Mark Jackson.
Tinsley, George Hill, Mark Jackson would probably be your biggest contenders, I would say.
Right? He gets close because they just don't have a lot of great – frankly, they don't have a lot of great point guards in the Pacers history. It's one of our, I guess
– in the NBA era, to be square here, I don't know enough about the ABA to say anything here.
Yeah, they really haven't – you're right. The Pacers have a lot of great shooting guards, small forwards, I feel like, but a lot of great point guards in their history. And they had a lot of great centers, too, really.
Positions historically.
Yeah, I mean, because, like, you do centers, right? You get Hibbert, you can go back to Smits, power forward, you get J.O., small forward, Artest, PG, shooting guard, you get Reggie and Vic. But, yeah, point guard is a weak one. So, yeah,
Vern Fleming was very good in the 80s and 90s, but was never at Brogdon's level. But he played his whole career with the Pacers for 12 years, 13 years, I can't remember. 11 years with the Pacers. Oh, he played 1 year with the Nets. He played 11 years with the Pacers.
I think you can't underestimate how good George Hill was in the playoffs for the Pacers. And that's
that George Hill's bump. We were talking about this in the Fieldhouse chat a little bit today. George Hill's bump is that he was very good on teams that went very far, right?
That's teams that could have won a championship if a couple of things had broken right. I mean, there was a playoff series, I believe, against the Knicks in 2012-13 season where he got hurt. And they legitimately lost this game because they didn't have him as a point guard. They also didn't have a backup point guard. I think they were playing DJ Augustine, I want to say, was their starting point guard in that game, which explains. And it was one of those off DJ Augustine, right? He's only good every other season, so it was one of his off seasons. But, like, he was pretty valuable and pretty important on that team. I mean, I know he gets a bad rep because you see the Kawhi Leonard for him thing, and obviously that's, like, a huge regret. But he was ultimately, like, the last piece of that Pacers team that kind of let them go on that nice run from 12 to 14. And he led them really well in 14-15 with that when all his injuries happened. It was just him and Hibbert out there.
Yeah, Tinsley was a good player, but a lot held him back from being a much better player. But yeah, he would just show up to the arena and casually have 8 assists and not try at all. But he's not in this mix. I don't know why.
He kind of is because also, again, the teams here are really good. But George Hill had sustained success with the Pacers, like 4 or 5.
Yeah, like he could have been in the George Hill camp where he led a really good team really far. And he kind of did,
but that team was more built around Artest, J.O., and Reggie, where I feel like the Pacers were really built around those four plus Stevenson, depending on, right? Like, I think the team was really built around the two Georges, Hill and PG, Hibbert and West. And that was like kind of like, there was no like alpha of those four. PG kind of was, but it was so early still, he wasn't quite the alpha yet.
Yeah, and then Mark Jackson obviously is probably your leader right now. One of the best passers.
Now that more I talk about it,
was one of the best passers in franchise history. Was on, if we're going by the George Hill thing, was on the team that made the finals, right, and played the Lakers that year. Was very good and historically good for a team that went very far. So he's probably your leader, I would say. Him, Fleming, Tinsley, and George Hill are your competition. Can Brogdon pass those guys? It would probably take playoff success, I think, and currently their projections there are not looking like they might not.
Deep playoff run, maybe.
Yeah, even one deep run, I think, might be enough, though, for him to do it.
Depends.
If he plays out all 4 years with the team.
Well, yeah, is it one deep run and then, like, 3 first-round no-show exits, basically? Because that might be. But, like, if it's like, let's say, 4 straight playoffs, first-round losses in 2, a second-round loss in the 3rd, and then, a conference final run, probably gets close. I mean, it also depends on his stats, right? If he's going to put up 20 points a game for the next 3 seasons, he's probably going to lock it up because no Pacers point guard has done that ever.
Right.
I think.
So maybe I'm being a little too ambitious with that thought, but 6 years with one franchise at his level of play gets you in a mix of like where you stand in a franchise historically, even if it's not, any other position, he would not be first. But a point guard he's got a shot at, and I think that is interesting. The other thing I wanted to mention for our close out here is what the belief this shows from the Pacers in Brogdon, because some fans have kind of soured on him in his 2 years here. Injuries are a part of that, but just in general, I feel like some fans are lower on him as a player. But the Pacers seem to think that he is very good, right? And there's some reporting about his vocal disagreement with past coaches, and certainly I think his voice is some factor in the coaching transfers the Pacers have had. But if the Pacers front office thought that was some huge negative, they wouldn't be rushing to extend him the first opportunity and offseason that they could, right? So while he certainly has his flaws, I think that this shows quite the belief from the front office in both his abilities and his ability to lead the team. I know we've already talked about that, but just to reflect on how it shows how the team feels about him, I think is important.
Yeah, I think Brogdon is hard to evaluate as like kind of an everyday fan or somebody who's not like always watching, because he's not super flashy. He doesn't do anything like, he's not like hitting 10 threes a game, or he's not blowing guys off the drill. Like, he beats guys to the rim, but it's not like, crazy moves. It's more like he, got enough separation to get his arms basically to the rim kind of thing. It's just not a super flashy style. But he does a lot for the team. He just contributes like in a lot of small ways. He very much reminds me of Thad Young in that way. And I think especially when they kind of get a really good roster, like when they can ever get to the point of healthy, which I think is like the biggest if in the history of the Pacers now. I've been doing this podcast. He can complement the guys really well at that point and kind of improve everybody slightly, which is kind of what you want out of your point guard.
Yeah, and damn, is he clutch.
Yeah, he's like oddly clutch, but like he's not flashy clutch, right? All his clutch shots are like, what was that one where he shot it and like it was like a kind of like hit off the back of the rim and had to like drop in? Like it's all these like not like, you know, Vic would like just pull from three randomly and drain game winners, right? And it was like super flashy and he'd do the this is my house thing like Dwayne Wade. But Broaden just like kind of goes in, dribbles, lays it off the glass. They go up one with 5 seconds left and that's it.
Yeah, he hits the floaters. They're like, oh, okay, cool. Man.
Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. I remember that the one I think you're talking about was against Denver that popped up off the back of the rim really high.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. They all at some point when you start, we've had enough game winners the last like 5 years as this podcast, they all kind of blend together sometimes. Like you kind of forget who did what. But he also really feels like really clutch in the 3-point shot when it matters. Like I feel like he hits a big three when like they're up one with, you know, 30 seconds left. I'll hit the three.
Can I do a small, like not Brogdon related tangent?
Sure.
NBA players and people who've played in the league and even analysts talk about the clutch gene, right? Like it's a thing, right? I don't think it's luck that some players are better in the clutch than others. That said, the Pacers have had a lot of game winners in like the time we've been doing this podcast. And I'm wondering if there's a luck element to it to the point where like eventually they might just like miss every game winner for a full season. And
well, so they were like a terrible clutch. They were really bad in the clutch under PG. Now they were blowing out teams for a couple seasons. It didn't matter. But like, remember PG had never hit a game winner until he went to, I think, Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Right. So like they just weren't that good for a lot of years. So, I mean, they were pretty good in the Reggie years. Reggie was known for his clutch play. So that also helps.
That's true. The cosmic balance of the universe is restoring. In the
yeah. Game so I think it just kind of flips there. I mean, Vic was like almost an anomaly of clutch player for his status, right? Like I know he had a really good 18, but he was still just super clutch in a way that like he's not a top like 5 player kind of and could still be that kind of clutch at times.
Oh, so. I got to the point with Vic where if they were tied, like you expected him to score almost.
Oh, especially in that 17-18 season and the beginning of the 18-19 when he hit that three against Boston in that game winner to go up like one. They were down 2 and he pulled up with 1 second, just drained the 3 and he was like, oh, okay, this is like what he does. Like he just doesn't miss in the clutch, so.
Brogdon's not at the Vic level, but he certainly had quite a few games.
Where he's reliable.
Yeah. The Bulls come to mind. The Pelicans come to mind. The Nuggets, like I already said, come to mind. Yeah, he's had the Lakers, I believe. He had a winner against the Lakers. The Magic, he had one. There's a lot. I can name 5 off the top of my head. So the Pacers have that belief in him to continue to be that guy until he's 33. And, you know, that's a high age. There's a chance of decline at the end of this deal, too. The fact we haven't really discussed, ironically, but also he came into the league late, so maybe not as much wear and tear on his body, but he also was injury prone. There's a lot of factors with his age. But so he will be older at the end of this, which is something we should probably close
32, with. Which I think is like...
Oh, 32. You're right.
So not as old as you think. I mean, we've now seen point guards. Chris Paul's 38 now, right? I mean, he might be an anomaly, but like point guards are playing a little bit longer now. I mean, some of that. So
yeah.
As long as he doesn't have, like, again, issues, like that's a problem. Like, usually guys who have bad draft, like, evals and their injury, it eventually just hits them, right? Like, Ranger 7 years in. He was great for 7 years, and all of a sudden it was over the next year. So that could happen at any time. So I think, you know, you're playing on maybe a little bit – Brandon Roy's the same way. Like, you're maybe playing a little bit of borrowed time. But he hasn't, like, had any injuries that would, like, pop up. And you got to think, too, like, I know medicine has not improved that much in 7 years, but it really actually has. And, like, just the ability to, like, diagnose things and – change the way you do, like Steph Curry example, right? The way they changed the way he ran, like there's just things you can do now that I think they understand better ever for like guys who have weird injuries that can be kind of solved, I guess, in the long run.
Yep,
but we'll see.
So the Pacers really value Brogdon to the point of wanting to keep him around for 2 more years. Brogdon values being in Indiana, playing point guard for the Indiana Pacers. Now they're together for 4 more years, and I think we learned a lot about what the Pacers expect out of the future of their team this year, and I'm looking forward to see it on the court in 2 days.
Yes, come Wednesday, right? Wednesday, there'll be two days away, 1 day probably from this podcast. The Pacers will play their first NBA basketball game of the 2021-22 season. So we'll obviously have a show right after that to do our overreactions for the game. We'll probably post it pretty much right away because that's kind of what we like to do. But tomorrow, Tony will have a podcast doing some bold predictions, previewing the Hornets game a little bit, whatever he can do from a previewing a team that hasn't played a game yet, but he'll figure that one out. Friday, he'll then preview the weekend's game. So that's the rest of our week's podcast. As always, you can check out our podcast on this YouTube feed if you're listening on YouTube or wherever you get this podcast. You can follow Tony at Teased NBA, me at FreeMadam5. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll see you guys again tomorrow.